by selling it to Americans, and for American companies, as a form of hedonism. And it is just a complete crime. And then they sell you and they have the pictures on the Tantra with all the sexual intercourse. But half of the night they don't use. They not only the human treatment to maintain, how long will you do it? You're just standing 6 times on your head and the poor girl and have to do the same. The acrobatic position. So if you were doing it for fun, you would rather stick to the mission and could think in our country is complex. And not things like this. I mean, even the predictions, I don't know whether you have that here, we have a dilemma. Giving all these predictions, which are possible, but if you apply it, it's something that is true, then there's something that is very simple. So therefore, it is samsa, like any other form of Buddhism says, that you can become free only by totally denying your interest. And the only way is to put on to it the one form of denying your instinct is to buy your next. And this, to some extent, I explain to myself by the heat. Because, I mean, I am a man who has traveled very large, very fast. And I always find, on the whole, in England, my libido doesn't trouble me very much. A little bit, I mean, that's all right. But when I travel south, it becomes more and more urgent. And when I am in Spain, I forget half of the things I have said about the filthiness of the human body and look for someone. Because the hormones are created by the heat. So therefore, these poor things are so full of hormones that the idea of paradise, you see, was, as long as it was from the Vedas onwards, was little girls to sleep with who do not smell, as the important thing, not smell, of anything. And they got you. Boom, they do it. And immediately afterwards, not only they can do it, I mean, most of them, but you too. I mean, normally, yesterday, somebody informed me that the ordinary male requires 6 hours to recover from this activity. But in these heavens, you just regenerate yourself instantaneously. And so what you look forward is to millions and millions of years of romping about with these celestial nymphs. You just think these people are off their heads. This matter, I mean, you must see that, really. That's very odd. So therefore, the Indian man was apt to be a bit over-obsessed with this matter, you see. And therefore, you see, I think from that point of view, these practices were created because of that. That's my theory. So, have I explained it as beautifully as I always explained everything? Yes, oh, that is the fresh air plus noise. Now we get fresh air plus fumes, I suppose. I've explained this to you to at least somehow to your satisfaction. And
Buddha's return from the mountains, his ascetic practices, and his taking of the milk, and his description of the middle way of neither denying nor completely complete austerities and neither indulging in the sense of the human practice. How does that fit into this understanding? It seems like we're talking about extremes, a complete rejection of repression, annihilation of desires on the one hand, humanism or overindulgence on the other. But did the middle way have nothing to do with that at all? Is some other middle way, or is there in fact some middle ground between them?
Well, if you now look at this story of Buddha, the Buddha Shakyamuni, then you will find he had as austerity, then he took the milk, isn't it, from Gauri, she gave him the milk. And then he made this speech on the middle. Has anybody got my Buddhist scriptures here? I mean, they're
get safer. You see, I mean, the whole point is the sequence of it.
He took the note, then he said under the tree.
The Enlightenment. He has been enlightened already, hasn't he? According to my book. Then he comes and gives away the begging bowls. Then he meets a mendicant and tells him that he has become an all-seeing Buddha. And thereupon, this mendicant says, most remarkable. And then he meets the five mendicants, and then he turns the wheel of Dharma. Now, so therefore the sequence is, when is the girlie then, the one with the milk? Nandabala, she is first, isn't it? Because he was so hungry that he couldn't think at all anymore. And then he went to the Yamuna River and the girlie gave him this milk. That's right. That gave him strong enough strength and he defeated Mara and became enlightened. Now, therefore, all I wanted to say was, is that this applies to the very last stages of the past, doesn't it? Now, where are we? You see, the first thing which people have always to find out, where are you yourself? And there I say, the Americans always think they are already on the last stages of the path and start to think form is empty, very empty, it's form, it's there, meat. So they never get anywhere at all. Well, you see, you ought now to ask yourself, where am I? And then you find, well, where are you then? I mean, certainly not. There at all. Right? Now you are here. So therefore you forget all about this. Now the question is, what bothers you? What bothers you? I mean, for instance, sex doesn't bother me at all. Doesn't interest me that much. God is a man of joke. So in consequence, we do nothing about it. Neither austerity nor others. But then you see, now you have a man like who has is full of sex. You have the same thing in Egypt. You had them burning themselves up. When they went into the desert. You see, when St. Anthony and so on went into the desert and saw that last day his feet, he saw a lot of naked girls there. Now, if you have that, of course, something has to be done. There's no doubt on it. I mean, I don't see any naked girls. I'm not interested. I don't see any afraid of them either. But if you are now in this overheated condition, you must ask yourself, what am I now going to do? Now, one form of doing is to say, close your eyes and think of something else. And then you'll find, the more you think of something else, the more naked the gods become. It's rather dead. And then you think of the Virgin Mary, some kind of bosomless, what a sex woman. So now you have various methods of dealing with this. Because it is your problem, you see. If it is not your problem, I mean, for most people, sex is not the problem at all. I mean, this is all made up. I mean, especially now, of course, it's very largely this overheated sex because of all this propaganda, you see, which they are pushing to you. But normally, I mean, most people don't find so much of a problem. They have other problems. But if you now have this overheated imagination, then you can now say to yourself, either you try to be good and think of nothing, or you think of the filthiness of the body. Or you think of the Virgin Mary. And no lust must stain your thoughts of the Virgin Mary. Or you find a little girl of 16 and bump into her and try to keep your spurs. Drive yourself skinny. So you see, a question has nothing to do with this. The question is that when you have an urgent you only deal with a problem if it is urgent to begin with. Isn't it? I mean, an occasional little bit of sex is no harm to anybody. You see, I always see that's the difference between us and the Christians. The Christians have poisoned everybody because they have the original sin. We are all sinners. Now, in order to make this clear, you must make a sin into a sin, which everybody does anyway. Now, as far as thoughts about sex are concerned, they are ubiquitous. I mean, I've got them all the time. I mean, in a class I once said that I walked on with my wife, and there was a very pretty girl walking in front, and I did this, you see. Now, if I had been a Christian, you see, I would have been worried for all the doing of the day. But I say, well, all those who suppose of my country, they're not on earth, it's just co-ed. They are sacred. But I mean, I had a thought. So therefore, you see, if you taboo sexual thoughts, indeed, you must have a sense of universal guilt, because everybody has them all the time. They are part of life. So therefore, you better leave them alone. I mean, you don't bother them. All the girls. So therefore, you see, your question gives no sense. You see, these to quote these things in and out of season gives no sense if you do not consider what stage of the past they are meant for. But if you have a serious problem, you can always get rid of it by austerity. And Buddhism has always had the 13 forms of austerity.
12
certain forms of austerity that you can look up in the dictionary. I mean, for instance, these, your competition, the abbot, the chant people, they do it. Sleep. You must never lie down when sleeping. That's one of them. We do have two students on my sleeping. We have very many toys. So, I mean, where are you? You see, you quote a thing out of season. You see, you bring it in because of this kind. We always, when I was in the Communist Party, we had the parlo-Bolshevism. That is to see, people try to be communist and have all the comforts of a bourgeois existence. And so you have now parlo Buddhism. I mean, Christmas Humphreys is one of the finest examples of it. Living about as luxurious and happy as he can, denying himself absolutely nothing, and quoting this in an autopsy. No, you don't. Somehow I don't get you. I mean, it is absolutely clear to me. You can't do it with quotations. I mean, if you have a vice, you have to burn it out.
As I say, sex generally, I mean, this is all here. It's at the moment. I mean, it has become a disease.
And I hope something will be done to stop it. Because it is just inflaming the imagination of everybody, all for nothing.
I'm trying to put into perspective what you're talking about. And so I keep hearing the last thing you said, that to the degree that it is that you overpower your vice, then that is the. Is the means, but it isn't necessarily the standard everyone is supposed to go through
after. No. There's absolutely no point in bothering about sex if you regard it as just a minor annoyance. But if you are a Taurus or a Scorpio, you see, this is how astrology now comes in. If you are a Taurus or Scorpio, then it is very serious. Or let me just look at your hand, because I mean, it's the greatest advantage to see here the knowledge. See, if you have not so bad, if you have what is known as the girdle of Venus, you see, then you are full of physical sexual passion, and you have to do something with it. A Gandhi sleeping with the naked gods, you see, that's one way of doing it. Something. I feel. But. See, that is why all this is so totally disastrous. If you have nobody to guide you. See, you have all these things, the quotations. But you must have somebody who says to you, well, if I look at your hand, my God, what do you do with all this viciousness? So what do you do with your physical sex? I mean, it shows it's a lot of innocent things. What do you do with it? And then you see, you try to find out, and if you are in their counsel, you are perhaps even telling them, you see, they lie. But I mean, you must do something with it. So you see, it's a question of stumbling from one concrete case to the other. The general rules are practically non-existent. And this is one of the most pernicious quotations ever produced all the time, because it allows people just to deny themselves absolutely nothing. But the whole purpose of this thing is to get rid of your blasted ego. So you must deny yourself things all the time. You see. But you must
see whether you have an obstacle. I mean, for instance, the obstacle, if I think of an obstacle which would be dangerous to my salvation, it would not be sex, which, as I say, regard as a total joke, but conceit. I'm incredibly conceited. And conceit is, I mean, regarded a very, very famous pride. And so, therefore, that is what I think. Seriously, I'm not going to tell you what I do. Not, you see. But I'm afraid of my pride, but I'm not afraid of my sex at all. I mean, I'm total 195% control of it. So therefore, you see, you must first find out what irks you. And then you must But you have to deny it to yourself. I mean, for instance, if you take the pride, but I don't want to go too much into it. I mean, I'm a very clever man. So in consequence of my pride, as long as I am in a situation of intellectuality, I will always win because I'm much more intelligent than most people. Or at least appear to me, because I'm terribly fast, you know, very loud. But suppose I would move myself into an environment in which intellectuality would not count, I would be just a very feeble specimen of an ordinary person. So this would be a denial of my pride, if you will. It would do me the world of good. But as far as sex is concerned, because I haven't got it, you see, it's not in my head. It's nowhere at all.
Can you say, or is it readily known, what is motivation for going into ascetic
practice? Ascetic motivation was exactly the point. I tell you that you must burn out your instincts. I mean, if you have Trishna, I mean, craving, I mean, the whole philosophy is based on the craving, then while you indulge it, you strengthen it. As long, I mean, I've quoted this before again about sex because it is such a famous quotation, as long as you have even the slightest attachment, sexual attachment to a woman, you are as helpless as a calf suckled by the cow. Now you see the calf suckled by the cow, I'm in a rather feeble condition. I mean, you do not expect emancipation from that, you see. So therefore you have to burn it out in some form or other. But if you have other things, I mean, like in my case, it doesn't need to bother me in any case. I would regard pride, see, in my case, as much more important. And there are some other things which I'm not going to tell anybody about. But the only way is to kick yourself. I mean, asceticism is the only road to salvation which has been known to any religion, known to mankind outside, again, this past period. I mean, could you give me an example of him? I mean, Jesus Christ, he was poor, wasn't he? I mean, how could Judas have been tempted by 30 pieces of silver if they had been rich, isn't it? I mean, 30 pieces of silver, I mean, I would not... I always think everybody has a prize, but mine begins with about $10,000 or $20,000, you see, anything on the I would not say, keep it for yourself. But then, I mean, say you come to 50,000 and so on, I would begin to wangle this in some form of quality. But if anybody would give me a message, it was one of the countless students I've got here, we were all worried over their grade, and they come in and say, I give you $50 if you give me an A.
Wow.
I mean,
really?
No, if they would say so, I wouldn't take it. If they gave me $50,000, maybe, then I would say, well, nobody really quite knows by what mental processes we arrive at all. No, you see, what I'm trying to explain is not how I can be bribed, but that he must have been very poor, isn't it? He had no home, you see, the Son of Man has nowhere where he can lay his head, isn't it? I mean, he led a pretty miserable life, I mean, he had no comfort at all, isn't it? He was completely unwashed Jew, wasn't he? And lived among poor, I mean, he knew nobody of any consequence, isn't it? And these fishermen and customs officials and so on. You see, low-class customs officials. Now, you see, there was nothing. This is necessarily skepticism, isn't it? Or is this not a skepticism?
My question is trying to understand the Prince Gautama's background. The stories go that he saw Lord Gainsbury's suffering, and somewhere along the way began to brood about that, and then he took off to the mountains and shaved his head, practiced for 6 years, and then was is, can you say, or can it, is it commonly known realm or aspect of his life or his obstacle, what it was that motivated him to spend 6 years burning out or
You see, that the Buddha, as far as we know anything, he led an extremely spoiled life. And his worry was that it would stop. That was his particular hang-up. He said, this is all very well, but it would stop. And so I said, I don't want it. What I want is something which lasts forever. That's the first thing. And then the second thing he said, then why does this pleasure which I have does not last? Because it is based on craving and greed. So I have to get rid of craving and greed. Now, the best way of getting rid of craving and greed is by denying them altogether. Do you see that?
Dr. Kanzi, it sounds like the problem...
Jesus Christ also was... It was unmarried, wasn't he, as far as we know? He had no women. He denied himself almost everything. His life was extremely simple. And you see that, then St. Francis later on tried to imitate him. And this was a total denial of everything. And this is exactly, this is his pattern, it's St. Francis' pattern, it's my pattern, which is one form of religion that you are brought up in such a terribly spoiled way that you react against it and glorify poverty and things like this. And I come from a rich family, so did St. Francis. And so did the Buddha. That is one form of reaction. But you have to take some ordinary person here who has never had the wealth in his youth. His pattern must be different. There's no point in trying to do the same thing because he can't feel it. He can't feel it. It doesn't interest. This is a joke. Even $50,000, I wouldn't take anything at all because I don't take any interest in the whole matter. But if I had not been a spoiled darling, who had never seen a working man till I was about 20, complete isolation, glory of our... In Germany, you are completely separated. Then, indeed, perhaps I would be less keen on poverty and things like that. Because I would think I would gain something from having money.
I think many of us come from that kind of background. Relatively. We're not poverty-stricken like the Indians.
Now, what I'm trying to drum into your head is that you want to make an abstract rule. Whereas I see it all depends on the concrete circumstances.
That's what I think these questions are coming out of, trying to meet that common ground. What is being referred to and how we relate that to our experiences. For me, that kind of extreme attitude about sexual practice, I haven't understood it.
No, but nobody wants to do it. Why don't you leave people alone? Why can't they do it? Are you sort of Christian who thinks that if one person does it, everybody must do it? If this madman wants to push around in these poor little girls and keep their semen at the same time, why not? Just nobody in the arm except for the girl. Why not? Why must you now sit in judgment on finding out whether they do any good? They have been thought to do some good, and they do some good not. The whole last question only came in because they did not do some good by indulging in their sex instinct, but by denying it. This rather strange form. It is like Tantalus or so, You can deny yourself the food by sitting here and have food always brought quite near to you. They had that in China as a form of killing people, that they were pushed into a cage and got nothing to eat at all, and then occasionally, to cheer them up a little bit, food was pushed underneath their noses, and they were allowed to smell it. Now, that is what the satisfaction these poor boys get from the yoga yabyum there, which they're girlies. You obviously don't understand it. What did you want to say?
What I was going to ask was the misunderstanding or the difficulty that you referred to in this particular story and asked about seems to have to do with the milk, or giving up asceticism, but this is used as a justification for not undertaking it in the first place. Am I correct? What you said there.
Yes, that's quite true.
Yeah,
but then I...
So it seems that what what I thought he was actually asking is, what was the particular problem at that stage which caused him to give up? I mean, it seems to me like the problem was he was in imminent danger of dying. He was dead. So in order to continue, he had to take something. That seems to me to be the extent of it.
Yes. But I mean, that's all there is to it. I mean, there's no problem.
That's all there is.
There's no problem.
Dr. Kanzi, what's the meaning of the terminal word?
Well, the meaning, according to this, is that, the normal meaning is, the normal meaning is, the middle way is the way between it is and it is not.
Oh, there's nothing to do with asceticism or life.
That's the one passage in which it occurs. You see, that in itself, I mean, if you would know, I mean, the bulk of Buddhist literature, I mean, there's millions of pages they have scribbled on this, I mean, the Buddhist literature, an enormous quantity of literature. Now, the middle way always means there is, it is one extreme, anta. It is not, is another anta, another extreme. Now, what you have to do is to find the way between those two, which is exactly the mu of the dog. Isn't it? Is the Buddha mentioned his dog? The mu means, as I've explained hundreds of times before, yes. It's a combination. No is wrong, yes is wrong. It's all explained thousands of times. That is the normal way in which, say, if you take statistically the Buddhist scriptures, in 98% of the cases, middle way means the middle between it is and it is not. Now there is this one passage in which it means the middle between asceticism and so on. And that is a sign of the degeneration of the Kali Yuga, that modern man wants a comfortable religion. You see, this is not confined to the Buddhists, but the rot set in with Saint Francis of Sales in Catholicism. Saint Francis of Sales, you know, came up in the 18th century. He thought that he had to find a comfortable form of, oh, fasting, my dear children, does not mean fasting. It means eating little. All this, what fasting is all. If you see, we were very wealthy, you see, in the Calvinist, and then if you ask, how is it then that Jesus, when we were very devout Christians, Calvinists, you see, that Jesus said that it is easier for a camel to go through the ear of a needle than for a rich man to go into the... And then it's my dear Eva, this is meant symbolically. It only means that you are possessed by your money. But we have our money, but it does not possess us, but we keep it in trust for the poor. Because if we hadn't got all this money, who would give employment to the poor, dear Ibaha? Do you not see this factory in which we have silk? There are hundreds of helpers. Now that is a comfortable. This is, you see, in the Kali Yuga, religion dies. And that takes two forms. The one is you make it comfortable. And the second is you deprive it of its intellectual content. Krishnamurti is here at the moment. Then you know what I mean by depriving it of its meaning. So do you see? So therefore, this quotation which I put in here, because, well, why didn't, why shouldn't I, you see, it owes its importance. You see? It has never been understood by Buddhists like that. Never. This is Christmas something. This is the modern man, you see, who is totally degenerate. And who just does not want to deny anything. I mean, fasting. I mean, I've done fasting. That's why I lost my teeth originally. You see, I mean, it's all work of the British government. You see, but, I mean, because of fasting. And good Lord, what I understood from the fasting. That is what the scriptures say. It opens your eyes to countless things. And fasting means nothing. Eating nothing, bloody well nothing. You're absolutely unusual. And that is one of the reasons why I'm so fussy nowadays. And I foresaw it at the time that I must be extremely careful with my food because his stomach is upset. And I saw the warning already that sent somebody or the founder of the Saint-François, the Clairvaux, you see, Clairvaux. He did the same. Fast, Mary Monsieur. And then later on, he had the ignominiousness that he used to go in the middle of the night to the equivalent, what would be here, a refrigerator, and pinch some pieces of chicken and so on, because his stomach was so upset. And I thought this will happen to me, and to some extent it has happened to me. That's why I cannot normally eat out, you see, because it did me the world of good, you see, whatever anybody thinks. And this kind of talk, that it just means you eat in moderation, this is just lying, you see. Now, likewise, poverty means poverty, you see, and everything means everything. And therefore, in the Buddhist scriptures, the middle way means between is and is not, like the. And this other junction.